And you know, you probably remember this during the presidential debate between Trump and Kamala Harris. You had Trump was talking about crime going up, and David Muir fact-checking Trump during the debate, saying, you know, President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is actually coming down in this country. And this is going to be something I'm going to talk about more later. There's two measures of crime. There's the Bureau of Justice Statistics measure of total crime, and then there's the FBI data on reported crime. And as I'll point out, only about 43% of violent crimes are reported to police. Only about 30% of property crimes are reported to police. So anyway, when David Muir did this fact check, they only had the 2022 data that was out, and at that time, they were saying the crime had fallen by 2.1%. In September 2024, the FBI came out with revised data for 2020, came out with the data for 2023, but they also went back and without explanation revised the data for 2022. Rather than a drop of 2.1%, it had shown a 4.5% increase. But they made no mention in their press release that they had changed it from a drop to an increase. And even if you read the FBI's actual data report itself, it made no issue of that. All it had was one footnote that just vaguely said, we have updated the data for 2022. Nothing else, no explanation for the update, no mention that it went from a drop to an increase that was there. And by the way, this last year, they revised it again, now up to 5.2%. So it, basically, overall, there was a 7.3% change in the crime rate over that period of time. And you can just kind of see it in this graph, the original 2.1% drop, the 4.5%, and then 5.2%. Now, the thing is, as I said, the FBI never explained the change, never made it clear. I only discovered it because, you know, it probably tells you more than you want to know about me, but I, you know, a Saturday night, I'm going and downloading data files, and I'm going through it, and I said, well, this isn't right. Something's changed here. And I noticed that they had, how they had changed it from a drop to an increase. And so I wrote up some stuff on it, made some noise about it, and the vast majority of the media ignored it, but there were some that noticed it. And they would reach out to the FBI for comment, and the FBI basically refused to verify it. All they would say is, we stand by our data. David Mastio, who had been an editor at USA Today, wrote about this in a column that he had. He said, quote, here's what I've learned in decades of covering Washington. When bad news is false, agency press people go out of their way to make it crystal clear that reports are definitely not true. When bad news is true, agency people spew a wall of fog and bury you under an avalanche of distractions, or in this case, contradictions. So, you know, the thing is, if they had actually come out and said yes explicitly, rather than a drop, it had been an increase, then that would have been newsworthy. And it would have made a lot of news, I think, even in the legacy media prior to the presidential election in 2024. But because they refused to make an explicit statement on that, they were able to avoid that before the election. Now, as I mentioned, there's two measures of crime. There's the FBI data on reported crime, and then there's the Bureau of Justice Statistics has something called the National Crime Victimization Survey, which surveys 240,000 people each year. Truly a massive survey to try to get a measure of what total crime is. And it's kind of considered the gold standard. The media, though, only looks at the FBI data report. And the thing is, up until 2020, these two numbers, this measure of total crime and crimes reported to police, tended to go up and down together. Since 2020, they've pretty much gone in opposite directions. If you look at the whole Biden administration, the National Crime Victimization Survey showed felonious violent crime increased by 59%.
That's by far the largest percentage increase over any four-year period ever recorded. At the same time, the FBI data on crimes reported to police showed an 8% drop that was occurring. Now, you know, my own guess is with most people, if you say, do you care about total crime or do you care about the much smaller percentage that's reported to police, they may care about both, but they're primarily going to care about total crime. And, you know, rapes were up by 38% during the Biden administration, robbery up 67%, aggravated assault 62%. By the way, violent crime fell, according to the Bureau of Justice, by 15% during the first Trump administration. And my guess is this last year we're going to see a huge drop in total violent crime when the numbers come out. As it is, it's pretty clear that we're going to see a record low murder rate. In 2024, the murder rate in the United States was slightly below 5 per 100,000. The lowest previous murder rate we've ever had going back to 1900 was about 4.5 per 100,000. And my guess is this year it's probably going to be something like, or last year it's going to be something like 3.96. First time we've ever been below 4 per 100,000. And, you know, to me, these changes aren't random or a coincidence. You know, if you want to reduce crime, it's not rocket science. You have to make it risky for criminals to commit crime. That means higher arrest rates, higher conviction rates, longer prison sentences. It also means letting victims be able to go and defend themselves. All those things make it riskier for criminals to go and commit crime. So during the Biden administration, not only did we have people like U.S. attorneys who were refusing to prosecute violent criminals, you look at the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, which is unusual in the sense that he's basically responsible for all prosecuting all crimes by adults. During 2022, he declined to prosecute 67% of arrests. During 2023, he declined to prosecute something like 56% of arrests. Having somebody like Judge Jean Pirro as the U.S. attorney, obviously she's much more aggressive, not only in prosecuting these criminals, but also in trying to get as big of a penalty as she can for them, not having to cut some type of nice plea deals with them. Now, one thing that's interesting is to kind of explain why these two sets of numbers have been going in opposite directions since 2020. And it's actually pretty simple to explain it. There are many reasons, I'll just go through two. And that is, one of the things we've learned over time is that whether or not people report crimes to the police depends in large part on whether or not the victims think that anything's going to happen to the criminals. If you don't think anything's going to happen, if you don't think they're going to be caught and punished, you're not going to have that many people who are going to be willing to go and step forward and report the crime to the police. In 2022, for example, if you look at cities over a million in population, there are 9 cities in the United States like that, what you find, in fact, is that only 20% of violent crimes were reported to police. Only about 8% of total violent crimes were reported to police. Only about 1% of total property crimes were reported to police. Not very risky for criminals to be going and committing those types of crimes. The other factor is also changes in the costs and time for people going reporting crimes to the police. If you were to call up 911, let's say 6-7 years ago, what would happen is the operator would ask you, is the criminal still there? Well, 6-7 years ago, they just send out a police car to go and take the report. Now, if you call up 911, they'll ask you, is the criminal still there? And people will virtually always say, no, the criminal's already left. And what will happen is the 911 operator will say, well, you can come down to the police station and wait in line, and we'll get a police report filled out. If you make it more costly, more time-consuming for people to go and have a police report taken, you're going to have some people who are going to say, you know, it's just not worth my time to go and do that. And so you're going to have more of a gap between crimes reported to police, maybe that's one reason why it would fall, at the same time, total crimes are going up. But you can just see the gap over the 4 years during the Biden administration. The blue are total reported total crimes from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and the burnt orange is the FBI crime data. Now, I just mentioned one other thing. It's interesting just even making comparisons across countries. So I was in Australia giving a series of talks in the beginning of February, and one of the things I discovered was that if you look at rapes and sexual assaults in Australia, only about 19% are reported to police, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. I think it's actually lower than that. But the National Crime Victimization Survey in the United States indicates about 45% of rapes and sexual assaults are reported to police. Well, Australians are under this impression that crime is relatively rare in Australia compared to the United States. The problem is, you can see the problem with looking at reported crimes when you have such huge gaps between the rate that people report crimes in different countries. If only 19% are being reported to police in one country and 45% in another country, you can see you're going to get a huge difference in the number of reported crimes simply because of the rate people are reporting them. And, you know, if you look at total rapes and sexual assaults in Australia, it's actually about three times higher than the rate in the United States. Aggravated assaults in Australia is about two times higher, and robberies are about 2.5 times higher than they are in the United States. Okay, now, as I mentioned, the final data for 2025 is going to be coming out. We're going to see a drop, record drop in murder rates, and I think we're going to see a huge drop in overall violent crime. Now, why is this? I think there are multiple reasons. I mean, obviously, you've had Trump going and changing the U.S. attorneys around the country. You've had him doing things like federalizing law enforcement in D.C. and Memphis, two of the highest murder rate cities in the United States. You've had him, to a lesser extent, be involved every place from Chicago to New Orleans to Portland, though those were less involved. But he's also gone and rounded up a lot of illegal aliens. So not only have you focused on criminal illegal aliens, and we can talk about some of the misinformation that the media puts out on that, but even the ones you haven't caught, okay, I mean, obviously, if you've removed them from the country, they're not committing crimes. But even the ones you haven't caught are less likely to commit crimes right now because they don't want to get deported. And how do you keep from being deported if you're an illegal alien? Well, you want to keep off the police radar, because if you get picked up and brought into a local county courthouse, ICE is often there waiting just to pick people up and deport them at that time. And since they don't want to be deported, they want to stay off the police radar. And the way you keep off of police radar is what? Just don't commit crimes right now. So I think you've had an impact on the crime rate, even from the ones who aren't committing crimes. Now, there's another type of FBI data that I want to talk about. And this one, I think, actually does have real errors in it. As I mentioned, I worked in the U.S. Department of Justice, worked there up until January 2021. I was a senior advisor for research and statistics in the Department of Justice, both the Office of Justice Programs and then later on the Office of Legal Policy. Now, active shootings are instances where a gun is fired in public, not part of some other type of crime like a robbery or a gang fight over drug turf, anything from one person being shot at and missed all the way up to a mass public shooting. And and it gets a lot of attention, and it's used in media reports, it's used in court cases, it's used in legislative debates, it's used in academic studies for the data that's there. But I would go and argue it's just riddled with errors. You know, one of the things that comes out of this, I'll just give you one example of media coverage on this, is it's used to go and argue that civilians rarely stop active shooting cases with permanent concealed handguns. The Associated Press headline, for example, says rare in the U.S. for an active shooter to be stopped by a bystander. Washington Post said rampage in Indiana, a rare instance of an armed civilian ending mass shooting. New York Times, after Indiana mall shooting, one hero but no lasting solution to gun violence. And you could go on and on. Now, I think the FBI's missed literally hundreds of cases. And nobody needs to take my word for this. We've collected all the cases that I think they've missed. And I pointed these out when I was working at the Department of Justice. And you can use this tiny URL to go and check them yourself. FBI missed active shootings. And links to the underlying news stories, so you can go and check them yourself there. Nobody needs to believe me on this. And what I think you'll see is that they've missed a huge number. Now, I'm going to show you a short video that basically goes through this, and then we'll talk more about it.
Do you carry a gun? Bad ideas. Hollywood. Countless TV shows portray good guys who try to stop crimes with their own guns as fools.
The wise police officer sums it up.
Leave it to a good guy with a gun to really screw things up.
Liberal politicians agree.
A good guy with a gun will stop the bad guys with a gun. It doesn't hold up.
It doesn't, say experts, the media feature.
Good guy with a gun statistically isn't realistic. It's an adolescent rescue fantasy.
An adolescent rescue fantasy? Now, I'm no gun person. I was raised among lefty gun haters. I assumed Hollywood and the media told the truth. But then, 17 years ago, I hired the best data analyzer I know. That very tall guy on the left, Maxim Lott, here talking to the nearly as tall John Lott, his father, a criminal justice researcher who wrote this book, More Guns, Less Crime. I was skeptical of some researchers questioned Lott's data, but I've come to believe Lott is making a good point. In places where bad guys fear a good guy might be armed, crime tends to fall. Often just showing a weapon is enough to stop an assault. Police don't track such events, but these days some are posted on the web. Here an employee grabs her gun and the robber runs away. And again here.
Three robbers caught on camera breaking into a pub in Atlanta. The men scramble to escape as the woman chases them.
When a civilian tries to stop one of these instances, they're overwhelmingly successful.
So why do all these TV shows lecture us about how it doesn't work?
The gun control groups brag about working with the screenwriters and the producers for the show.
This group even boasts about its partnership with Hollywood and how they're consulted on scripts.
There's major star power behind an effort to rewrite the script on how guns are used in Hollywood.
They think they're making us safer because they believe FBI reports that say shooters being killed by citizens is rare. Why does the FBI say that?
They're simply missing a huge number of cases.
For example, the FBI includes the famous Pulse nightclub shooting.
At least 50 people are dead.
1 week afterwards, there was a similar attack at a nightclub in South Carolina.
There, a concealed carrier took down the shooter.
The thing is, it got virtually no news coverage.
49 people being killed is going to be a bigger story than the 3 people being killed.
I understand, but the guy still had like 125 rounds of ammunition on him when he was stopped. You would have think at least some of the news coverage would at least mention. Here's another case that almost turned out to be the same, but it was stopped.
Also, remember the Parkland shooting?
At least 17 people are dead in Parkland, Florida.
Just a few months later, in Titusville, Florida, there was an elementary school that was having a big event at a park right next to the school. It had hundreds of students there, and a man came up, started firing his gun.
Police said the gunman was then shot by someone else who had a legally concealed weapon.
And was able to seriously wound the attacker and stop him before he was able to go and kill anybody.
Bystanders saved a lot of people's lives, says the police. But I never heard about that. Local media covered it, but hardly got attention beyond that. The FBI somehow also missed it. At crimeresearch.org, Lott lists cases where bystanders stop shootings, cases that the FBI often ignores, like this one.
3 people are dead, several others injured.
Ron Edwards was at a party taking selfies with his pregnant wife, but then a guest at the party began firing at people.
catches me in the right side of the head. Bullet entered right here around my ear, goes straight through my face and out my left eye.
Somehow, Mendez went covered.
I gained consciousness, and I unloaded 4 rounds and finished him off.
He probably saved the lives of a dozen people, including his wife and daughters.
You know, preventing him from, you know, killing those girls.
You always carry a concealed gun?
I always do.
Why?
It's just about being prepared.
The FBI records instances like this, but somehow they have no record of your case.
They're not reporting the true numbers. You know, guns actually saved.
It's one of many cases like that the FBI is missing.
Yeah, why wouldn't they include this?
There's a lot of political views that people let infect their data. I had interactions with the people in the FBI. I had people go and tell me, well, I'm a Democrat. His response is that somehow that's how we determine whether or not to fix the data.
The FBI who carry guns are anti-gun. It's just unbelievable.
I think the people at the top, I think, are more politically motivated than maybe your rank and file FBI agent. If they think that it would go against the narrative that they want to go and push, then they'll fight.
We asked the FBI about those cases they missed. They responded, their data is not intended to explore all active shooter incidents, but rather to provide a baseline understanding. Seems like they admit their data's incomplete. But the media sure don't.
This kind of outcome is rare.
This is very rare.
No, self-defense is more common than they say. And it does stop lots of crimes.
It'd be great if we could just get all guns to disappear. But the problem is that when you go and you ban guns, it's basically the most law-abiding good citizens who ban it. Every place in the world that's either banned all guns or all handguns has seen murder rates go up.
Why would that happen?
If you're primarily disarming their victims, you make it easier to commit the crimes.
But the so-called experts still say
there haven't been good guys with a gun who stopped mass shootings. It's the kind of thing you learn from reading comic books.
I was prepared, and it saved lives. There's no comic book story about that. Those are facts. That's what happened. I was there. I'm sure there's many more out there that'll go unheard.
Okay. So, as mentioned there, we've been going through this data. I've been going through this for a number of years. We break it down from 2014 through 2024, the most recent. The FBI, any day, may be coming out with its data for 2025. We'll see if it's any better. But you can see from these different comms here, this is the FBI data on the number of active shooting incidents. They claim over these 11 years there's 374. They claim that only 14 of those were stopped by people with concealed carry permits. And amazingly, in 2023 and 2024, they claim that there is no cases in the United States where a civilian with a permit concealed handgun stopped an active shooting case. These are the ones that we say are missed by the FBI. So we claim overall active shooting instances stopped by civilians over these 11 years are 202 versus the 14 that the FBI claimed were the case. And overall, rather than about 4% or 3.6% of the attacks being stopped, I think it's about 36%. You know, if you just look at 2024, for example, they're saying it's zero. I think almost 48% of the active shooting attacks that year, 22 out of 46, were stopped by civilians with concealed carry permits. So it's pretty different. And I'll just mention one other thing. While it's 36% of all the active shooting cases, one of the debates, this is on our website if you want to get the data, you know, the graphs or whatever. It's all this stuff is on our website, and one of the reasons for filling out the email blast is that you can, I mean, you can take pictures of this too. I'm not telling you not to, but it's just, I'm just saying you can get even cleaner shots. Anyway, one of the debates I had with the FBI was I said, look, guys, you're talking about law-abiding citizens stopping these attacks. You can't expect a law-abiding citizen to stop an attack in an area where it's illegal for them to have a gun. I mean, you know, you're counting against it. And so if you just look at places where civilians are legally allowed to carry, rather than 36%, it's actually over 50% of the attacks. And in 2024, slightly over 60% of active shooting attacks in places where people were legally allowed to carry were stopped by legally armed civilians with a concealed carry permit. So you can just see kind of the difference. I think there's 561 of these cases. Again, you go back to the earlier tiny URL that I was telling you about before, and it's on our website. You can go and double check yourself. Get an idea of just the magnitude of the errors. You know, and incidentally, you know, as John Stossel says, our data is not intended to explore all active shooting incidents, but rather provide a baseline understanding. In 2023, I got Glenn Kessler, who used to be the fact checker for the Washington Post. You'd think the FBI would talk to the Washington Post to go and do an investigation of this. And Glenn, who I got to know a little bit over the years, reached out to the FBI, and the FBI he gave him my list of cases that they had missed, and the FBI refused to respond to the Washington Post on it. What happens is the police departments don't collect this data. The FBI hired these kind of left-wing academics at Texas State University to go and do Google News searches. I don't know, are there any lawyers in here? No lawyers. Well, there are things like Lexis and Westlaw that people normally use with computerized databases, which are much better at finding these things, particularly older stories, than Google News search. And I could give you a lecture on the issues with Google News search. But anyway, he reached out to them, and of the couple hundred cases that I had given them, a research professor at Texas State University did get back, and he said that there were two out of all the hundreds that they objected to. One was a shooting at a dentist's office in Tennessee, in which a woman was killed. A man went in, started firing his gun at different people, and a permit holder there pulled out his gun and stopped the attack. And basically, I went through then the FBI's own list and said, look, guys, you have 14 other cases that are virtually identical, except for one difference, and that is nobody with a permanent concealed handgun was there to stop them. But you include these, but you don't include one where that's the case. Another incident they gave was from a bar strip club in Portland, Oregon, where a man had been kicked out of the bar, went, got his gun, came back, started shooting up the place, and a concealed carry permit holder shot him and stopped the attack. Well, they didn't include that, but I found three other cases where people were thrown out of bars, got a gun, came back, but nobody was there to stop them with the gun, and they included those. So, you know, but the amazing thing is you have none of these cases do they exclude. The only difference is whether a permit's involved. Now, at the Crime Prevention Research Center, we just finished a big study, kind of doing a deep dive on these active shooting cases. Over the same period of time from 2014 to 2022. And what we wanted to ask was, what's the difference between civilians and police stopping these attacks? And I think what I've shown to myself is that you have to appreciate what an incredibly difficult job police officers have in stopping these active shooting cases. If you have somebody in uniform, I mean, there are good reasons why we have police officers in uniform. But putting an officer in uniform makes it incredibly difficult for them to stop these attacks. Let's say you're somebody who's going to go in and shoot up an area, all right? And you see an officer in uniform there. What are you going to do? You can either wait for the officer to leave the area before you attack, or you can move on to another target yourself. Both of those make it less likely that the officer is going to be present if an attack occurs. Or if you're going to insist on attacking there, who are you going to shoot first? Having an officer in uniform there is kind of like having somebody with a neon sign above them that says shoot them first. Let me give you a simple analogy. We have air marshals on planes, right? How many of you honestly think it would be a good idea to have air marshals in uniform? And at least you know them, you had an air marshal there on the plane. Wouldn't that would be a good idea, wouldn't it? No. Why wouldn't you want to? No, nobody that I know wants to have an air marshal in uniform, okay? And why not? Because if you did happen to have terrorists on the plane and you had the air marshal in uniform, you're essentially telling the terrorists, this is the guy you got to take out first before you go and try to take over the plane. It would kind of defeat the whole purpose of having an air marshal on the plane there. One of the debates I've had with some of my conservative friends is I say that they want to have uniform police officers in schools. And I say, look, if you're going to have police officers in school, please do not put them in uniform. Please make them blend in, make them the PE coach or give them some other staff position or something so that people who might attack would have no idea who it is and then have a sign in front of the building that says, warning, select staff at this school are armed and will use their guns, concealed handguns, to go and protect others. But what we find is that civilians actually stopped more of these active shooting attacks than police did. And police, even though they stopped fewer attacks, they were 12 times more likely to end up being killed than the civilians, which is pretty astounding. So anyway, so, you know, another topic I'll just go into, and that is this issue of mass public shootings. It's similar to the definition of active shooting attacks, with the exception that active shooting attacks involved all cases where a gun was fired in public, whether you fired and missed or, you know, many people were killed. Mass public shootings, just the word mass adds to it the fact that it's four or more people killed. And this is kind of the typical graph you get from someplace like the New York Times. It says, look, basically, more guns owned in the country, and we could go and the lecture that I just gave earlier kind of talked about guns per 100 people and stuff. But the claim is that more guns, you're going to get more mass public shootings. And obviously Obama and Biden and many other Democrats make this type of claim. They say, I say this every time we've got one of these mass shootings, this just doesn't happen in other countries, and I'll go on. But I'm going to show you a short video here, and then we'll talk.
You've probably heard that America has the most mass shootings in the world. It's often given as a reason for more gun control. The economist John Block looked into that claim, and he says it's a myth based on one bogus study.
The United States had the most mass shootings.
By far, the most public mass shootings.
You don't see murder on this kind of scale with this kind of frequency in any other advanced nation on Earth.
Where did that claim come from? Obama and everyone else based it on
a study done by University of Alabama professor Adam Langford.
University of Alabama professor Adam Langford.
This is Adam Langford.
I studied 171 countries for more than 40 years, 1966 to 2012. And essentially the answer was, not surprisingly, the United States has by far the most public mass shooters.
This claim received coverage of hundreds of news stories, but all these people were misled by it. Langford's study claimed that since 1966, there were 90 mass public shooters to the United States, more than any other country. Langford counted 202 shooters in the rest of the world. Langford claimed complete data were available for 171 countries. But how did Langford find every shooting in all these countries, most of which don't speak English? And how did he find all the cases in the years before the internet? Few governments collect this data. Finding complete data for mass public shootings in just one developing country, say India in the 1970s, would be an incredible feat. Many of these shootings would have been reported only in local outlets, in the local language.
That shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut.
On the other hand, the United States mass public shootings are well documented and hard to miss. If Lankford undercounted four cases because he missed finding old newspapers or had trouble with language barriers, his paper's entire conclusion that the United States has the most mass public shootings would fall apart. Many journalists and researchers asked Lankford who was there. Not only did he refuse to share a list of his cases or even the number of shootings he found in each country, which are nowhere in his paper, he refused to share an explanation for how he found those cases. That's happened in reporting practice. Asked if he used foreign languages to search for these shootings, Lankford stated, "My data were not proven to do a study research." Asked what languages he used, Lankford refused to provide that information. "This is all the assistance I can provide at this time," Lankford said. "Look, I've researched crime for decades, and I've published dozens of peer-reviewed academic articles on this subject." Lankford won't even respond to my email with a simple question. "Now, maybe he doesn't want to talk to me because I'm well known for my research, more guns, less crime. But Lankford had refused to share his list of shooters and methods, even with strong gun control evidence." This all seemed very suspicious to me. So the think tank that I run, the Crime Prevention Research Center, researched it. Unlike Lankford, we took a lot of time to find all the foreign cases we could. We even got translators to identify cases using the same definition of mass public shooters Lankford used. Four or more people killed in a public place, not part of some other type of crime. We found that he grossly undercounted foreign attacks. We counted well over 3,000 shooters, at least 15 times more shooters than Lankford claimed.
31% of total shooters, despite the fact that we only have 5% of the world's population.
Of the 86 countries where we've identified any mass public shootings occurring, the United States ranks 67. Norway, Finland, Switzerland, and Russia are European countries with significantly higher rates of murders from mass public shootings.
The explanation is firearm ownership rate.
When Lankford's data are fixed, there is no relationship between gun ownership rates and mass public shooting. There's a lesson. Lankford's critical but simple error could have been picked up if journalists had only demanded his data and methods before publicizing the study. Journalists should learn to be skeptical. In the meantime, we should all be skeptical of news coverage of studies like this that simply confirm what journalists and people want to hear.
Before releasing this video, I also asked Lankford for his data and methods for finding shootings in foreign language media. Lankford would not provide that information.
So, so there are a couple other points I guess I'll make on this. You know, when you're talking about mass public shootings, the media coverage really impacts the discussion on this. And there are a couple things that I found have pet peeves about in particular. You know, the mass public shootings are often used as kind of the catalyst for pushing more gun control laws. So one of the things that I find most bothersome is that they, even though they're covering the diaries and manifestos for these mass murderers, they refuse to cover those parts of their diaries and manifestos where these murderers explain why they pick the targets that they do. I would think that's newsworthy. But one of the things that they do time after time is that they pick areas where guns are banned, these gun-free zones. You know, these guys are planning these attacks at least 6 months in advance, sometimes a year, 2.5 years in advance. You have something like the Minneapolis school shooter last fall. That individual, in his manifesto, it's the media covered the fact that he discussed other mass shooters, which is true. But what they leave out was why he talked about the other mass murderers. He talked about the other mass murderers because He had learned from them to go and attack a gun-free zone. You know, and on top of that, not only did he pick the target because it was a gun-free zone, it was the time of day he picked because in order to make sure nobody was there, because he didn't want to go in the morning when parents were dropping off their kids at school. He didn't want to go in the afternoon when they're picking them up, because he was worried that one of the parents there might have a permanent concealed handgun and might use him to go and stop the attack that was there. So he did it in a gun-free zone during the middle of the day. And you just see this time after time, whether it be the Nashville school shooter or others. We've compiled a whole list of cases, dozens of cases, where it's mentioned in their diaries and manifestos why they picked the target, and they do so time after time because it's a gun-free zone. And yet you will search in vain to see any news stories anywhere near the news cycle there about why they pick the targets that they do. You know, the other thing is the media could simply mention that the attack had occurred in a gun-free zone. We have like 93% of all the mass public shootings since 1950 have occurred in places where guns are banned. And, you know, the media will go and talk about what type of gun was used or where they thought they got the gun. Many of those initial news reports are wrong. You know, they'll even call them automatic weapons when there hasn't been an automatic weapon used in any of these mass public shootings. They'll go and get it wrong about where they obtained the gun initially. One of the easiest things to go and determine is whether the attack occurred in a gun-free zone. And yet you will never, ever, ever see the media mention that. My guess is the whole gun control debate that we have right now would be dramatically different if even once in a while the media says, well, we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns are banned. And, you know, this isn't rocket science. You just have to read the diaries and manifestos. These guys want to get media coverage. They're suicidal almost always. And they know if they go to a place where their victims can't defend themselves, they're going to be able to go and kill more people and get more media coverage. You don't have to get rid of the First Amendment. You don't have to ban the media from covering these individuals. If you can convince them that they're not going to be able to go and kill many people and therefore take away the news coverage that they think they're going to get, you can prevent them from doing these attacks. So, you know, you look at somebody like the Sandy Hook killer. He had done what the police described as a doctoral dissertation, where he had looked at mass public shootings over the previous 40 years around the world. And unbelievably, he had graphed out the relationship between the number of people killed and the amount of media coverage that they got in order to prove to himself that if he could only kill more people, he'd get more media coverage. Now, his goal was to go and kill more people than the Norway killer, who has killed more in a mass public shooting than anybody in the United States history. If you ignore the bombing deaths, he shot to death 67 people in Norway. But he wanted to go and kill more than the Norway killer so he'd get more attention. Now, I can't go and prove this, but my guess is the reason why he went after an elementary school was the shock value. He thought killing little kids would help generate more news coverage for him than going and killing some other group of people, and he might also thought that they would be easier targets. There's one other point I'll just mention. This really isn't a data point, but you know, when people create these gun-free zones, one of the things that they do in order to create it is they create criminal penalties for those who violate the gun-free zone. So in Minnesota, if somebody carries a handgun onto school property, that's punished by 5 years in prison. For anybody in this room, any law-abiding citizen, 5 years in prison would completely destroy your life. That would be a huge penalty, being a felon and having to spend 5 years in prison. But let's say you're the murderer. In the Minneapolis school shooting case, the guy killed two people and wounded 17 others. How many life sentences do you think he's facing there? 5, 6 life sentences of penalties? Is taking 5 years away from his 6th or his 7th life represent a penalty? He's not going to live 6 lifetimes. There's no real penalty that you're imposing on it. So what you've done in setting up this penalty structure is you've set it up so that the only people you're really penalizing for taking a gun into that gun-free zone are the law-abiding good people. That for them, that's a real penalty. But you're not imposing a real penalty on the bad guy that's there. And so, unintentionally or not, what you've done is you've set up a system so that the only person who's going to take a gun there is going to be the bad guy. And so he knows that he's going to be the only person that's going to have a gun and be able to go and do it. Now, I'm happy to go and take any questions that people might have from the audience here. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming. Please fill out what before, I'll get to you in a second. Please fill out your emails, you know, because, again, I spend 80, 90 hours a week working on this stuff, but it doesn't do any good unless, you know, voters and other people out there know about this stuff so you can go and share it with other people that are there. So anyway, I hope you find this of use, but yeah, I'd love to take questions.
I just have one question about the people who are defending themselves and they take out these either killers or they don't kill them, but they either kill them or maim them. I don't hear anything back about those people being punished by the system. And I would presume that they would be made an example of a bad guy by the bad media. Can we assume that a lot of these guys are these people who are defending themselves and have saved these things, they've been cleared of any other crime?
Yeah, they're not punished.
Okay, that's what I want to make sure.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'll just make a comment generally here. You know, a lot of people want you to go and buy insurance for carrying concealed. Personally, I think it's a bad investment. I think, you know, as long as you follow certain reasonable rules, you know, there's a reasonable person standard, I think the insurance and stuff is much too expensive compared to the value. Because if, you know, unless you're going to go shoot somebody in the back or shoot somebody when they're clearly not a threat to you, the likelihood that you're going to end up being punished is incredibly low. And when we're talking about these mass public or active shooting cases, you just don't see people being punished in those cases. Yeah.
Chance to experiment with AI at all in terms of looking at ways to use it to expand the number of correlations you might find?
Well, I don't know if you look, do you ever look at our website?
Not yet. I did not know about it. You brought me here to learn about it.
Okay. Well, anyway, we've done a report every, I don't know, four times maybe. Where we go and ask, you know, the different AI chatbots a series of questions about crime and gun control issues. And, you know, questions like, do higher arrest rates and higher conviction rates reduce crime? And we could tell the AI chatbots, do you strongly agree, neutral, disagree, or strongly disagree? And it's pretty amazing, but this last time, I guess, was a little bit different, but virtually every time we've done it, all the chatbots say they disagree that higher arrest rates and higher conviction rates reduce crime. Half of them will say they strongly disagree that higher arrest rates and higher conviction rates reduce crime. And on gun control, you know, you go and you ask them, you know, does a complete ban on guns, either all guns or all handguns, reduce violent crime? Reduce murders, and they'll all agree that it does. And, you know, and the one example that they'll always pick, I don't know if you've been in my earlier lecture, I went through this, but because I can't find a place in the world that's either banned all guns or all handguns where murder rates have gone down or even stayed the same. They'll mention Australia, and I'll say, well, you know, I don't argue with the chatbots on this, but directly, though I do separately, but outside of doing these survey questions, I'll say, well, first of all, Australia didn't ban all guns. What they did was they confiscated about 30% of guns, but people were able to go and buy guns again after that. What you find is that by 2010, at least, if not before that, the gun ownership rate in Australia was above what it was before the confiscation occurred in 96 and 97. And so you know, both in handguns and other guns. And, you know, it just, you go through these things, you know, you go and ask them questions about assault weapon bans or other things, and they're incredibly left-wing on these things. You know, to some extent, it reminds me of Google News searches. So if you go and do a Google News search, what you're going to find is that there's certain sources that they weight more heavily. They come up on the first page, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, places like that, Wikipedia. You know, you have to go pages 4, 5, 6, 7 or more before you may get what might be considered a more conservative outlet that's there. And that's because the people who set that up have made decisions about what sources they view as more credible or not than others. And the same thing happens when you have these AI chat box. You know, somebody in the back there has basically said, you can go and look at all sorts of things, but we're going to weight certain types of information more heavily than other types of information.